Okay. It is May 11th. Time marches on. We are going to hear first House Bill 2916. I would ask Ms. Harris to tell us a little bit about the bill. We're going to skip around on the agenda today, so if any of you have any scheduling needs, send us a note, and we'll try and accommodate you as best as possible. Ms. Harris.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Committee. House Bill 2916 essentially repeals a statute that makes state financial assistance to public libraries contingent upon a library's maintaining actual operating expenditures for services.
I assumed you two wanted to testify. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Okay.
Madam Chair, Senator Ringo, I'm Nan Heim, representing the Oregon Library Association, in support of House Bill 2916, which was requested by our association. As your administrator explains, this bill repeals the local maintenance of effort requirement for local libraries to receive state ready-to-read grants, and that's the only state general fund assistance for public libraries in Oregon. When state aid began to
excuse me, we're officially in subcommittee because we don't have a quorum yet. I'm hoping my committee members will hear this and come on down. Keep going.
When state aid to libraries began in Oregon, our association actually asked for the provision that we are now somewhat ironically asking to be repealed. The purpose of it was to ensure that state grants were used to enhance public library services and not to replace local funding for libraries. But what we found over the years is that local support for libraries in Oregon is very strong, and that local cuts tend to occur only when there's some kind of downturn in local economy. So what has happened is that public libraries lose their ready-to-read grants at a time when they need them the most. And over the last 12 years, our association has twice come to the legislature and asked that this provision be suspended. And this year we decided that it was time to ask that it be repealed. Thank you.
Going out on a limb this session?
Yes, we are.
Okay.
Thank you.
Mr. Shepke, did you wish to add anything?
Yes, Madam Chair. My name is Jim Shepke. I'm director of the Oregon State Library, and I wanted to note that the State Library Board of Trustees supports House Bill 2916 for all the reasons that Ms. Heim indicated. We know that there's many public libraries right now that are facing challenges to their funding around the state, and if we don't repeal this provision, many libraries won't get a ready-to-read grant in the next biennium, and the board would prefer to see that every public library in the state benefit from this very important program.
Thank you. This is perhaps the shortest bill I have ever seen in the legislative session. Any questions for the panel? We appreciate you bringing this matter before us, and we are very supportive of our libraries and, of course, the ready-to-read grants, so we want to do whatever we can. Any questions, Senator Farrielli? It literally is four sentences long. Is there anybody wishing to testify on the fact that we're going to repeal ORS 357.770? Nobody jumping up and down? Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Close the public hearing. This is very exciting. We get to move to work session. The chair would move House Bill 2916 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? Hearing and seeing none? So ordered. Who would like to carry this bill? I think we should have a party. We're actually repealing a statute. Anybody want to carry it? Senator Ringo, why don't you carry it? You got two kids.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Senator Ringo spells library, L-I-B-E-R-R-Y.
Well, I've never been to one. Is that?
I don't believe that. All right.
Told his folks he was going there.
It's pretty good. Okay. Okay. Let's do House Bill 2246. Ms. Hunt or someone else from LC? Not here.
Oh, they might be watching.
Okay. And someone else could come in on House Bill 2260 as well. My understanding is Elsie is going to testify on that one. So while we're waiting, let's do 2246. Vicki, why don't you come on forward, Ms. Chamberlain?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Vicki Chamberlain, Director of Teacher Standards and Practices Commission. I'm not legislative counsel, but this is a housekeeping bill. And in Section 34 of the bill, they propose to eliminate a definition that we rely upon heavily, but it's not cited anywhere else in our chapter, so they thought they were helping us. I actually had the amendments drafted in the House, but I missed the work session to get it put in the bill. Oh, Cindy's here. It's not controversial. The section would eliminate the definition for interns. We use interns quite extensively in our teacher preparation program. I believe we still could, even if this amendment went through, but I think it's much cleaner if you allow us to keep the definition, and there isn't any question about our authority to establish internships for practicum experiences. So our amendment is in the -1 amendments, and it is our request that you amend the bill when you move the bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Hunt, welcome.
Hi.
Hi.
Cindy Hunt, Senior Deputy Legislative Counsel. The bill you have before you was one of the bills that was prepared on the request of the Legislative Council Committee under our general direction from them to basically make the statutes clearer, cleaner, better, to prevent lawsuits and attorney fees for school districts. And so what we did when we were going through the education laws is, as I was preparing the draft, I circulated it around to a variety of people, which are listed, I think, on a memo that's in front of the committee. Yes? Okay. Yes, I'm looking at your committee administrator.
The memo will be in front of the committee.
Sure.
Within 3 instances.
Right.
3 seconds. Yes.
In any case,
I have so much paper. If I had it, I wouldn't even know about it. So,
in any case, the bill draft was submitted to a number of lobbying groups and state agencies and people in the building for review and that kind of thing. And many of them had some really positive comments and actually added some things into the bill that they saw as issues and problems that had come up as they were doing work in this area. So, and the memo also goes into section by section what's actually being done in the bill if anyone has specific questions about the sections. But as examples from the bill, to give you the flavor of what's in there, like for example, in section 3, what we did was actually the Department of Education is never actually created in the statutes, and clearly we have a state Department of Education. So in section 3 of the bill, we actually do create that department.
And Sharon, I'll be deeply opposed to the passage of this bill.
Great, Senator Ferriale.
Another example is in Section 12 of the bill, where you'll find the Early Childhood Education Trust Fund. And based on the language, it's fairly clear that the money in the fund is probably for the Department of Education to administer early childhood programs,
uh-huh.
But it's never actually appropriated continuously to the department for that purpose, which is basically a requirement of the Constitution that it be that money be appropriated before they can expend it. Another example would be in Section 31, which is ORS 339-327. And what this one is that back, I think it was about 4 years ago, the legislature adopted 2 different sections. They came through 2 separate committees on what happens when a school district is in receipt of a list that threatens harm to a student or a school employee. Well, the 2 committees never really got together on this, so they enacted 2 separate statutes that placed somewhat different requirements on school districts in this area. So for the last 4 years, if a school district wanted to know exactly what to do in this area, that may result in attorney's fees and consulting their attorney to see how do these statutes work together, if they're in conflict, etc. So what I did in this bill was repeal one of the statutes and try to merge the two into the section that you see there. So that's an example of some of the things in the bill, and I will stop with that unless any of you have specific questions.
I don't. Sarah Ferrioli?
Well, Madam Chair, I think agencies acting without authority and expenditures of public funds without appropriation
I was just looking at the relating clause on this bill, relating to corrections of erroneous material in Oregon education law. And the only question I have is what when this was received in the House and moved out from committee and onto the House floor, what was the final tally on the vote in the House, please?
Chair Brown, Senator Farioli, I believe it got unanimous vote. It was on their consent calendar.
Mm-hmm. So it just flew right under the radar. And, thank you, Madam Chair. I have no further questions.
Thank you. Ms. Hunt, is it fair to say that this is the kind of work that the Law Commission also does in terms of technical housekeeping, fix-up, clarification of statutes, that sort of thing?
Chair Brown, that's correct. I know that the Law Commission has done things like this in the past. I know our office, through the Legislative Council Committee, and has a process where if we see a problem in a statute, either when we're drafting or creating the ORS, we write a note. And then that note comes up when we're doing bills and things like that. So it's also part of our process to clean up the statutes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sarah Farioli.
I'll defer to my colleagues to the left.
Madam Chair, I was looking at that relating clause, too. I was wondering whether education service districts could be considered erroneous in some way, but we won't.
Senator Reno, the chair is not going to entertain that conversation because that's not the bill before us. However, I would probably note for the record that the reason that the relating clause was crafted the way it was is that the House has sort of had a process of making sure relating clauses are very narrow this session, but I could be wrong. Is that, were you? Well, I don't know. I can't ask that question because that's confidential. But anyway, I'm assuming that's why it's such an odd relating clause. Hmm. So,
Madam Chair, would the Department of Education cease to be a legal entity if we did not pass this bill?
Chair Brown, Senator Farioli, I don't believe so because in other areas in the statutes, clearly they are directed to do things. We give them money every session. At least it's implied that they're created. So, no. No.
And a follow-up, Madam Chair, is
Senator Farioli.
Are the funds that were expended without appropriation recoverable?
Chair Brown, Senator Farioli, I don't believe so. I mean, the intent of the statute's there because it says those funds are for the purpose of a particular program. But that doesn't mean that the statute can't be clearer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It just seems to me that we do a lot of puffing and blowing in this building about the authority of the legislature being conferred, and clearly sometimes the authority is only implied, and things just go on. Lots of folks, I believe, are under the impression that bureaucracies take on a life of their own. This is proof. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Farioli. Any further discussion on this bill? Thank you, Ms. Hunt. We appreciate you being here. Let's close public hearing. I would like to open a public hearing on House Bill 2260. Are you ready to go into?
Sure.
We'll do them both at the same time then. 2260? Ms. Harris.
Thank you, Madam Chair. House Bill 2260 makes essentially cosmetic or stylistic technical changes to the statutes within Oregon Revised Statutes, Chapter 291. That's the chapter governing state financial administration.
Thank you. Is there anybody here that wishes to testify on House Bill 2260? Okay, I'm not seeing anybody from LC. I think we're going to close this public hearing until someone arrives. And
Madam Chair, when they arrive, will they have to plead the fifth in order to testify in this bill?
I don't think so, Senator Farioli. Let's open a public hearing on, should we do massage stuff or should we do vertical housing? Let's do vertical housing. House Bill 2199. We're getting a little rummy and it's only Wednesday. Ms. Harris, what's the bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair. House Bill 2199 is a sort of comprehensive bill modifying the laws governing vertical housing development zones. One of the primary provisions is that it transfers oversight of vertical housing development programs from the OECDD, that's the Economic and Community Development Department, over to the Housing and Community Services Department.
Take it away, you guys.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. For the record, I'm John Fletcher with the Oregon Housing and Community Services Department, and I'm here to speak in support of House Bill 2199B. This bill, as has been mentioned, takes the vertical housing program that exists today and changes it in three ways. First, it moves the program from Economic and Community Development Department to the Housing and Community Services Department. We think that's a good idea as we deal with housing a lot more than Community Economic Development Department does, and many of the issues this program deals with the nuances of what constitutes residential space versus commercial space, and the ongoing monitoring of compliance with certain income restrictions that will be in place with certain provisions of this bill. So that's a better fit for our department. The second thing that this bill does is it clarifies which projects can qualify for the vertical housing program. In order to encourage more community development and use of the vertical housing program, we have worked with different departments to try to make for better definitions of rehab, for example, is a new area that wasn't clearly defined. What constitutes equalized floors, the formulas for determining the exemption, and also clarifying which department or which group would actually make the certification. We worked through some issues with the assessors. So we've done some administrative technical tweaks to the bill to clarify the rules and procedures. And then lastly, as the program comes over to housing and in keeping with our mission, we added an additional incentive for affordable housing. So if a mixed-use project includes affordable housing as part of their project, they can exempt a proportion of the land as well as the regular exemption on the building part of the project. So those are the three things that the bill does. As we communicated this with DLCD and with OECDD and with the cities and counties and revenue and tried to get all the players' concerns out on the table, we heard from the cities and counties that it would be good to revisit this program after a while with these new changes to make sure that everything's still being run effectively. So they suggested a 10-year sunset of the program. We had no problem with that, and so the House included that as an amendment, and that's now part of the bill. That concludes a very brief overview of what the bill does, and I'd be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you. Mr. Fletcher, if I can hold you right there, I'm going to bring Ms. Robinson up, open a public hearing on the bill that I asked her to come speak on, and then we're just going to close it right down and then open you back up again. So, close a public hearing on House Bill 2199, open a public hearing on 2260. Ms. Robinson, thank you so much for being here this afternoon.
Thank you. My pleasure. Joan Robinson, Legislative Council. House Bill 2260 is one of the bills that was requested by the Office of Legislative Council, by the Legislative Council Committee, on behalf of our office. It's a cleanup bill. It's one that we were not certain should go in the revisers bill because we are extremely conservative about the revisers bill. We don't put anything in there that anybody might raise a question about substantive changes. I don't believe this makes substantive changes, but there were some weird things, that's the technical term, in 291.990. If you look at the bill, all it does is take out these string sites in 291.990, which are in each subsection, subsections 1, 2, 3, and 4, and gather them together in a new subsection 5, mm-hmm. so that we don't have to repeat the string site in every subsection. We don't run the risk of amending one subsection and not the others when they're clearly supposed to be the same. But the weird thing is in the current law, the string sites, there are ands and ors in the string sites that confuse mm-hmm. things. So if you look at line 9, you have 283.160 and 283.305 to 283.390 or 281.001 to 291. You know, there shouldn't be ands and ors. We don't know what it means. I don't know when it happened, but I didn't like it, and so I thought we'll take the opportunity to clean it up. So unless the ands and ors mean something, and I don't believe they do, this doesn't make any substantive changes. And if they do mean something, no one knows it, so it also probably doesn't make substantive changes. So that is an explanation of the bill. I am not allowed to be in favor of it or opposed to it, but I am the one who suggested it.
Well, that was very interesting. Thank you very much. Any questions for Legislative Council?
No need to claim or plead the fifth on that one.
All right. We'll let you go back to your little cave back there. And thanks for coming out for us.
Ivory tower.
Oh, it's an ivory tower. Okay, I think that's better than a cave.
Oh, but I think cave is a little more accurate.
Okay, we're going to close the public hearing on 2260 and open back up the hearing on 2199. Mr. Barenberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Dave Barenberg from the League of Oregon Cities. Just wanted to echo what Mr. Fletcher said. This is a bill makes what was a good concept a much more implementable and useful tool for local governments to use in specific circumstances to help spur downtown and development, and housing development, and is something that I know several cities are currently contemplating using, including the city of Milwaukee, which has been very interested in this and had testified on the House side but were unable to be here today, but wanted to add their support. So thank you very much for the opportunity to testify.
Questions?
Yes, thank you.
Senator Farioli.
This is an excellent concept that I've supported in the past legislative sessions, and I just want to have an assurance that it can be used in urban cities of over 10,000, in urban settings of less than 10,000, and of a wide variety of communities. There's some language in Section D, subsection 3C, that appears to tie the development to light rail or transit areas or urban centers in the core areas, and I just wanted to make sure that that's not exclusive language, that it doesn't exclude other uses of the vertical housing tax credit.
Madam Chair and Senator Farioli, it does not exclude other uses, and it can be implemented in a city of any size throughout the state.
And Madam Chair, when we originally proposed this and passed this legislation, it had to have a connection with retail centers. And now this basically just is non-residential, so it could be a wider variety of first-floor uses. I think it does add utility to the bill.
Great. Any other questions?
Yeah, Madam Chair.
Senator Brinko.
I'd just like to know a little bit more about how this operates and what the how much the tax exemption amounts to. Start with that. What's the amount of tax exemption that might be at stake here?
Madam Chair and Senator Ringo, if a mixed-use project has one equalized floor, or let's say it's a three-story building, and the first floor is commercial and then it has two floors of residential above that, the way the current program works is that if it's established within a vertical housing zone and comes forward as a vertical housing project, they would be entitled to 20% property tax exemption on the building portion of the property tax for each floor that they had residence. So in the example I gave with two floors residential, they would get a 40% exemption on their property tax for 10 years, and then it would phase out.
And do you have any estimates in Multnomah County what the total amount of tax revenue lost is to the vertical housing program?
I have a program person in the audience that could maybe help with some dollar examples.
Mr. Barenberg?
Yes, Madam Chair, Senator Ringo, that it's a voluntary program, sort of projects or specific, so it doesn't, you know, create an automatic exemption. It's, the idea was it would be very targeted, so that, you know, passing the bill creates zero, but it could be utilized in particular circumstances.
Well, I understand that, but I'm not sure I want to do that. I mean, there's been a lot of criticism, and the Pearl District is part of my district, and it's a wonderfully revitalized area, and we like to go down there a lot. But there's a lot of tax money that is not getting paid to cities and schools because of that. And I think we have to look at tax exemptions very carefully.
Mr. John, and I can't remember your last name, I'm sorry.
Madam Chair, my name is John Morgan. I manage the housing finance section at Oregon Housing and Committee. There is additional work that would be done on this. I might just mention that there are 9 zones that have been established, none that I know of in the city of Portland. In the case of Milwaukee, I think there have been a couple of projects that have moved forward. In the case of Milwaukee, a zone has been established on the 1.9 acres in Milwaukee. A project is being proposed. The city manager has done an analysis of that as he presented that to the special districts and the taxing districts, which are 100% participating. And currently the site is not generating any property taxes, owned by the city. They're in the process of providing the approvals on that development, and we're looking at the financing. There was quite an analysis, I don't have that in front of me, that we could provide the committee, that the city manager provided, showing the not only the advantage of the partial property taxes that will be paid on that non-producing property over the next 10 years, but what the tax will be after that period as that project's developed to the maximum density.
Okay.
Senator Ringo, any further questions?
Well, I would like that information, but I do have another question. Is the concept behind vertical housing that type of construction won't occur without the tax incentive? In other words, they won't develop it on their own. They need financial assistance.
Chair Brown, Senator Ringo, I might just mention, as I did before, that we are looking at the financing of the project in Milwaukee. These financings are very tight, and getting the required loan amount on tax-exempt bonds, for example, requires just about every resource we can think of, and paying full property taxes from the beginning on that project would not allow the permanent financing to be in place that's required to make that work.
Thank you.
Other questions, Senator Ferriola?
My understanding, Madam Chair, is that these zones would be authorized by the municipalities in public processes there, and further that these zones could be established and the credits used for rehabilitation of commercial buildings and retail buildings that already exist. So it's not necessarily targeted new construction. And I guess the focus here in those rural communities or the smaller commercial centers will be there's an awful lot of second floor, third floor buildings that need rehabilitation. And they're, you know, in some cases they're in a fairly dilapidated condition. They're not architecturally significant, so they don't qualify for the historic national designations. But they could, with the right tax incentives, attract investors to rehabilitate the seconds and third floors. Even though the jurisdiction loses the tax revenue, which, you know, after rehabilitation can be pretty significant, the residential impact of the families moving into the community tends to act as an attractant for revitalization of other businesses. And, you know, you used a great example, Senator, of the Pearl. There was a lot of incentives that went into the Pearl, including the district designation and the historic designations. And now it looks like a gold mine that all we did was use federal or state monies to enrich potential investors. But I remember a point in time when the Pearl was a seedy, crappy, run-down neighborhood where, you know, we had essentially situations of blight going on. So you point to the Pearl, and there's a lot of revenue not being collected, but there's a tremendous increase in value that's really revitalized that part of the community. So, you know, the question is, did the investment pay off? Yeah, it sure did. But someday will those properties come back at the full value of the tax roll? They will. unless, you know, the legislature continues to extend the tax benefits.
Mr. Fletcher?
Chair Brown and Senator Ringo, certainly there might be areas of a city that will not need the incentive to attract development and to be prosperous. And that's why the two-step process of having a vertical zone designation by a community first before projects come forward is in place, so that communities can make that assessment themselves to decide where they need to have those incentives in place and where they're doing just fine, thank you, we don't need to lose our tax revenue. And because there is this two-step process, I think there are protections in place for cities to protect the areas that are doing well now and then encourage more development in the areas that may need a little help. But that would, again, be up to cities to have that wisdom to know just where to apply this program.
Thank you. Any further questions, Senator Ringo?
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
I note for the record, Mr. Randy Tucker from Metro is in support of the bill. Mr. Salzgiver, are you just here as a cheerleader? You want to testify? Come on up.
Chair Brown, members of the committee, for the record, Mike Salzgiver with Oregon Economic and Community Development Department. This bill was actually initiated by the department and handed off to housing. It is one we support. The tax credit is a good one. Senator Farioli's summary of it was very well taken. And the reason we support the bill is it really is not the kind of development that our department administers. It really belongs with housing. So it's a streamlined cleanup housekeeping bill, really, in that regard.
Great.
We support it.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Salzgiver?
Thanks
for coming forward this afternoon. Anybody else wishing to testify on whatever bill we were on? 2199. Okay, with that, we'll close the public hearing. Last but not least, open a public hearing on House Bill 2105. Ms. Harris, why don't you tell us a little bit about the bill? Ms. Nielsen, why don't you bring me a witness list?
Thank you, Madam Chair, Committee. House Bill 2105A defines aesthetics for purposes of regulation by the Board of Cosmetology. It clarifies existing definitions and scopes of licensure for the practice of barbering, hair design, and facial and nail technology.
Okay, I'm going to have a panel of proponents come forward first.
I should clarify that there is a -2 amendment, and I believe that Robin McGinnity from the Board of Massage is here to explain the substance of the amendment.
All right. So first, let's bring up Ms. Wilson and Mr. Marquis. Then we'll bring up Ms. McGinnity, and then Ms. Knott and Ms. Stannard. Go ahead.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Jim Marquis, representing the Board of Cosmetology. I have with me Sue Wilson, who is the Director of the Office of Health Licensing. House Bill 2105 is a bill that deals with one of the licenses issued under the Board of Cosmetology. There are basically three licenses issued, one for hair, one for nails, and a license currently called facial technology. In 1977, the law was amended to put a provision in that said facial technologists could do skin care above the seventh vertebrae only. And we're, I believe, one of very few states that have that restriction. This bill removes that restriction and changes the term from facial technology or facial technologist to esthetician, a term which is used in 40 some other states. The bill is fairly straightforward. I don't believe that it really expands any scope of practice beyond that which these folks currently do, either under their license or provide unregulated. It will bring a certain degree of regulation to those activities of those licensees in treating other portions of the body below the seventh vertebrae. Ms. Wilson did her due diligence on this bill early on, and I believe reached out to everybody that she could that might be touched by this bill.
Is that fun?
Yes, it is. Thank you for catching it. We work extensively with the Oregon Association of Massage Therapists, and they are satisfied with the bill. They officially, I believe, neutral on the bill, but have no problems with anything we've done in the bill. Many other associations that we worked with either support or remain neutral on the bill. None of the professional associations that we're aware of, at least in Oregon, are opposed to this bill. I believe that the Board of Massage Therapy continues to have some concerns, and I do want to point out that we've had several meetings with them, tried to work with them. Their executive director did want some changes to the bill that would have created problems for some of the other folks that we had worked with that had already agreed to support the bill or be neutral. We didn't make those changes, and I believe they still continue to have problems. So you will hear from them today. I don't want to speak for them, but I would just tell you that I believe their concerns are unfounded. They do have a set of amendments which were apparently drafted prior to the hearing in the House, but not presented in the House hearing. Representative Dalto and the members of the House committee, I believe Representative Dalto chose not to consider those amendments. The bill was moved out unanimously. It was placed on the consent calendar. There were no votes in the House. So I just want to say all that for the record. With that, I'll turn it over to Sue Wilson. I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Ms. Wilson.
Thank you, Chair Brown, members of the committee. There's little left to be said. I am Susan Wilson. I am the director for the Health Licensing Office, and we are a central agency. This model was created in 1999 to provide standardized and uniform regulatory operations, licensing, and enforcement services for a variety of licensees, and we currently have 8 boards and 1 program, and we license 15 various, very different professions, from directors and midwives to the folks that Jim has mentioned today, cosmetologists. One of our jobs is to make sure that in providing the standardized services to these boards and programs is that we look to our regulations and make sure they are providing the type of regulation that matches the training and education of those that are licensed by our agency. And in doing so, we found this particular statute needing some definition changes as it related to the fields of practice for estheticians who provide skin care, and just some few real small changes in the definitions for the other 3 modalities. I want to point out that what we believe we have done in this change is align the skin care portion of the law with the international and industry standards, and that we've reinstated skin care for the entire body by removing the seventh, which was implemented in 1997. And we want to move forward with what we believe is a partnership with the Department of Education, private career schools, in making sure that the training and education matches the regulatory process. And we will be doing that as soon as this bill becomes law. I've provided the committee with the items in front of you, which are the letters of endorsement and also some correspondence between myself and the executive director for the Oregon Board of Massage Therapy. And I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Do you have any questions? Any questions, Senator Ringo? I think you answered all their questions. Well, thank you very much.
And Madam Chair, I would like to point you to this brief 3 points. 40 states nationwide define scope of practice for skincare 7 without some C7 restriction. 45 states nationwide use the term massage in the scope of practice for skincare services. And 25 states nationwide use the term manipulation interchangeably with massage for these kinds of services. So this isn't something unique that we're attempting to do here in Oregon. I want to point that out. And I would like to reserve the right to speak to the Dash 2 amendments if you're going to consider them. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Markey. Ms. McGinnick, McGinnity, and then Ms. Knott and Ms. Stannard, why don't you come up as well?
Hi, welcome. Hi, thank you. Chair Brown, members of the committee. My name is Robin McGinnity. I'm an assistant attorney general, but I am here not on behalf of the Department of Justice. I am here on behalf of the Oregon Board of Massage Therapists. The Oregon Board of Massage Therapists position on House Bill 2105 is neutral. The board supports the concept of regulating full-body skin care. However, they feel the bill still needs some fine-tuning. The board worked with legislative counsel when the bill was in the House side, as Mr. Markey mentioned. Unfortunately, they didn't obtain the draft in time for the House Health and Human Services Committee to digest the amendments. Now the board asks that you consider the amendments they proposed. As drafted, they amend the bill as introduced and not the A engrossed version. So my understanding is that that would need to go back to legislative counsel. The Board of Massage's proposed amendments can be grouped into three primary areas. The first pertains to education. The draft that they proposed adds minimum education provision specific to the new practice of aesthetics that's being created. Under House Bill 2105, it is substituting aesthetics for the practice of facial technology and broadening the scope of what they may do. The board's position is that there needs to be a corresponding increase in the required hours of education, and that is not occurring in this bill. They're amending the provision that would that includes that number of hours, but they are not amending the number of hours. Area of concern that is addressed by their proposed amendment is that the board's position is that they could restructure the bill such that they would be adding the practice of aesthetics in addition to facial technology instead of substituting it for facial technology, and that would create some added benefits. It would create a better system for requiring related education. Practitioners who chose to practice as estheticians may then be required to obtain the corresponding education necessary to engage in the new practice area as part of the application process instead of trying to deal with how to grandfather the people that haven't gotten that education. In addition, restructuring the bill to add aesthetics instead of replace facial technology creates greater flexibility for the schools. The board's understanding is that schools that currently offer facial technology programs could opt under the draft that they're proposing simply to continue educating students to be facial technologists without having to perhaps expand what their facilities have. For example, if they're now going to add body wraps or something where they need an area within the school that has some degree of privacy to it, they wouldn't have to increase, you know, whatever their office space is or the school space, and then they wouldn't have that added concern. The third area that the bill addresses is that the board believes their draft creates a safer delineation of where massage may be conducted by nail technologists and specifies what kind of body wraps may be performed. The revisions proposed by the Board of Massage include that while nail technicians may massage, cleanse, treat, etc., the hands, arms below the elbow, and the feet, they may only cleanse or beautify the legs below the knee, in other words, not massage that area. One of the board members provided a list of pathologies or contraindications when you get involved in massaging the lower leg. Apparently, there are a lot of risks associated with that. If people have conditions such as diabetes, any systematic infection, circulatory problems of any kind, kidney disease, varicose veins, things like that. A long list, but that's some of the items. The Board of Massage's amendments eliminate those concerns by not extending massage to that lower leg portion of the body, so that concern would be taken care of under their draft. In addition, under the Board of Massage proposed amendments, It limits body wraps to those that do not elevate or reduce the core body temperature or otherwise produce pronounced physiological effects. Apparently, there are risks associated with wraps done, for example, for weight loss purposes that elevate and reduce the core body temperature, and they would want education to correspond with that sort of added area, practice area. In sum, the Board of Massage believes that the changes included in the offered amendments are consistent with the stated intent of the bill and yet address the Board's concerns. Thank you for the opportunity to testify. I'm happy to answer any questions if I can. If I can't answer them, I'll work with the Board to get answers for you.
Thank you. Ms. McGinnity, Amy maybe stated this and I missed it, but were these amendments not presented to the House Committee, and what kind of conversations did you have with the Health Board before session with regards to these issues?
I didn't personally. I accompanied the executive director to one conversation, and I think that was, my understanding is that was very late in the game, and they kind of felt it was too late to work with that. I'm not sure, though.
Okay. Thank you. All right. Whoever wants to start first.
I'm Diana Knott. I am here actually as a concerned public member regarding the effects that could come about with the change of this bill. It's a noble intent for the bill, which I don't think anybody disagrees with.
So, Ms. Knott, let me just clarify for the record, you're a public board member on the Oregon Board of Massage Therapists?
I'm just a member of the public.
Got it. Okay. I just wanted to clarify that. Okay.
Yeah. The intent of the bill is regulation, which in the grand scheme of things is for the protection of the public, which is what everybody wants. However, the bill in its current language fails to accomplish that and creates some very serious concerns. The most significant concern with this bill is that there are currently over 17,000 facial technologists that would be grandfathered into the esthetician title and scope. There are no requirements in place for any increased education along with that increased scope for those 17,000 practitioners. Very few of those practitioners have been trained to recognize physiological effects that can occur with certain full-body treatments. There are no provisions in the statute for additional education, nor are there any continuing education requirements or increased educational requirements that would apply to those current practitioners. It's absolutely imperative that those people who have access to the full body receive appropriate training. Not only are there considerable safety issues with the lack of training and contraindications and physiological effects, there are significant boundary and ethical issues at risk as well. Because of these concerns, I'm also aware that the Board of Massage has worked diligently and hard to try to get something that can come about and make everybody happy, and I believe that that has come about with the Dash 2 amendment. I have a great fear that some innocent practitioner will become a victim of circumstance simply because they were not required to obtain proper training. Their only learning curve would be as a result of the unfortunate circumstance of treatments gone wrong. A good example is if they have a diabetic client come in for body treatment, such as a full body wrap. The practitioner is not required to do an intake on the client. They are likely not aware that their client is a diabetic. They may not recognize the signs or concerns when they wrap that client in hot cloths. They may see the client as being completely relaxed, whereas a properly trained person would have or should have done an intake and would be aware enough to watch for signs of diabetic reaction. They would know that the slurred speech isn't relaxation. It very well could be a cause of concern for that particular client. A more personal scenario actually involves someone like my mother, who appears to be a fit woman in her 50s. However, she does have several ailments, which include lupus and Raynaud's syndrome. If my mother were to go in for a body treatment for either weight loss or an improvement to her skin, and the practitioner providing that is not aware of her system, they could literally kill her. The practitioner wouldn't be aware that an imbalance in her body chemistry can cause her kidneys to shut down. They would be completely unaware that the treatment could cause any physiological effect. When it comes with the weight loss, the body wraps with the weight loss, the reason the weight is lost is because you've been dehydrated. The water is taken out of your body. If the practitioner doesn't know that, they may not know the proper course or things to look out for this practitioner. these very same reasons are why the full body skin care does need to be regulated, so that the public is protected. But I don't want to see it go halfway there. It doesn't make sense to only regulate it partially without adding that increased education and protection for the public. There are issues also surrounding boundaries and ethics when it comes to having access to the full body of someone, particularly if that body is going to be nude. Doctors, massage therapists, physical therapists, chiropractors, anybody that's going to have access to a vulnerable client has to have proper treatment and understanding the body's reaction to touch, possible things that could happen, just anything along those lines. And these practitioners don't have that. They're not aware or wouldn't know how to handle if something occurred during treatment, such as an emotional release, which can happen quite often. So it does need to be regulated. And I just ask that you do take the time to consider the concerns and to really look over the Dash 2 amendment and see that it does make sense. It does create that safety that so many people are concerned about.
Thank you. Ms. Stannard?
Yeah, Chair Brown and members of the committee. I am Dr. Jill Stannard. I'm a naturopathic physician and trained as a massage therapist, licensed as a massage therapist and as a naturopathic physician. And I'm also director of education at the Oregon School of Massage. And I won't belabor some of the points that have been made by Ms. Knott and Ms. McGinnity, but I would like to urge you to look at the amendment too and look at the provisions of keeping in place a facial technology profession with its current scope of practice and current regulations, and look at creating the profession of aesthetics where we can take from square one and work with and create a profession that will include full body application of product, full body application of body wraps. It's a brand new industry, and we are just at the beginning of really understanding how to regulate it. We're really beginning to understand, in terms of modern physiology, the effects of body wraps on the human body. So we're very much at an infant stage in this profession. So I think some of the state regulations that were referred to previously, yes, that's true, but I think that we're embarking in some new territory that we're not really fully aware of yet. So I would just like to reiterate that I believe that the committee should look at the Amendment 2 provisions before moving the bill forward. Otherwise, I support the bill because I think that we should have regulation in this area.
Dr. Santa, you're just saying you support the bill, but you think it should go further, and that would include the Dash 2 amendments. Is that correct?
Yes.
I'm going to pick on you because you're the professional in this area a little bit. One is, and I have really limited experience in this area. I think two body wraps at Carson Hot Springs is my sum total. My recollection is that we sign a waiver before we do the body wraps at Carson. Isn't that true of most of these body wraps? Isn't there some type of waiver where the client says, I have no problems? I mean, even going in a hot tub, you can cause problems with people with diabetes and some other conditions, heart conditions. Isn't that true, that there's some sort of waiver signed that the client is notified that certain conditions are, you know, maybe at risk under the wrap or whatever, and isn't there a release sign normally?
I am not a professional in the area of cosmetology, so okay. I don't know the answer to that. As a licensed massage professional, a person would do a full intake, full health intake, and be responsible for the health intake information that you got from the client, as a physician, as a physical therapist would be.
Okay. And then I guess, Ms. Knott, the question I would pose to you, and then I'll come back to you, Dr. Stannard, and that is, I've heard doctors provide or get extensive medical training, and I've heard of numerous cases of psychologists, psychiatrists, and physicians sexually assaulting their patients or getting into inappropriate relationships with their patients. I frankly have never heard of a cosmetologist, a massage therapist, getting into an inappropriate relationship or a sexual assault. So, and I don't know if it's just
the dynamics or who becomes...
From a massage board, I can tell you that that does happen.
Okay.
In fact,
okay.
In a very recent past, there was an issue with a massage therapist from the state of Washington who did engage in issues with one or more of his clients. And this is somebody who is trained, is supposed to have that
medical
training, which really frightens me. What happens if somebody doesn't have that training at all?
Okay. All right. And then I guess for either one of you, and maybe Ms. McGinnity, did I get that right? McGinnity? Okay. Has anyone in Oregon ever died from a body wrap or some kind of what I would consider more cosmological treatment? Has there been, or gone to a hospital, has there been any emergency room visits that we're aware of, or, you know, any situations where someone's life has really been seriously at risk?
The research that I've done regarding the subject, the only thing that I could find were issues where the Federal Trade Commission was concerned about body wraps in themselves, and where the Better Business Bureau indicated that the wraps were potentially dangerous and harmful to you. The public.
Okay.
I have a haircut like that once.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much. Anybody else wishing to testify on this bill? Committee's going to be in recess for about 5 minutes. We're going to come back and probably do most of the other bills. And I don't know about 2105. So give us a couple minutes, please. Wilson and Mr. Marquis, do you want to come back up with her? You're running out of time. Okay. Why don't you guys sit here for a minute? I'm going to close the public hearing on 2105. Let's get my need my list. Senator Ringo has to leave while we wrestle with the body wraps issue. I'm going to open a public work session on House Bill 2199. There are no amendments to the bill. It was amended in the House. The chair would move House Bill 2199B to the Senate floor with the due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? Hearing and seeing none? So ordered. Who would like to carry? Actually, Senator Shields would love to carry unless you want to, Senator Farrielly. Okay. All right. Open a public hearing on House Bill 2246. The chair would move the -1 amendments. I'm sorry. A work session on House Bill 2246. The chair would move the -1 amendments to House Bill 2246. Any discussion? Any objection? Hearing and seeing none? So ordered, the chair would move the bill as amended to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? Hearing and seeing none, it's so ordered. Who would like to carry 2246?
I'll just beat it up, Madam Chair.
Should we give it to Senator Atkinson since he's not here today?
Oh, that would not be nice.
I am no longer nice. I am no longer nice. This is too close to the end of session. Okay. All right. We'll let you. You can carry 2246.
Still beat it up.
Open a work session on 2260. The chair would move House Bill 2260 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? Hearing and seeing none. It's so ordered. And I'll carry that one. And I think that's it except for 2105. Am I right? Ms. Harris, did I get them all?
Yes, you did.
Okay. All right. Back to the public hearing on 2105. Ms. Wilson, Mr. Marquis, and Ms. Leonard, fire away. Just would like to hear your response to the -2 amendments.
Madam Chair.
Brief response.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Jim Marquis. to the -2 amendments. These amendments, to me, don't even make any sense. They create a two-tier system. The people who are currently licensed as facial technologists would continue to be people who got some sort of different training would be estheticians. The amendments are more restrictive as to facial technologists than is their current scope of practice. So they would be more restricted than currently they are. They would, estheticians, while getting more training under this amendment, would be more restricted in some areas than facial technologists. And the whole thing doesn't make any sense to me. The way they're worded, I think they're terribly flawed. And beyond that, I would just remind the committee, body wraps are not regulated now. If the Board of Massage Therapy thinks it is so important to regulate body wraps, why don't they bring a bill to do so?
Thank you, Mr. Markey. Ms. Wilson, would you please state again your position for the record?
Correct, I will. Madam Chair, my name is Susan Wilson. I'm the director of the Health Licensing Agency, and we license and regulate 15 varied professions, this being among that group. I have a couple of comments as it relates to wrapping, and not the kind that's musical. Wrapping the face already goes on. They put hot towels around your face when you get a facial. I have five doctors. I have 50 board members, five doctors on my boards. I've asked each and every one of them, what increases the core body temperature? Showers, hot tubs, saunas, wraps on your face. That's my comment in response to some of the issues that were raised about contraindications. The other issue about public safety, we have public safety brochures. Our website has many public safety brochures, all of which, for nail technicians, for example, require and rule that they take intake notes when a person comes in. Some of those questions would be, are you on any medications? And are you on a blood thinner? For example, if you clip somebody's nails and they're a diabetic, you can cause grave issues. They're doing that now. They soak their feet in a hot bath before they do their nails. That can raise your body. That can elevate your body temperature. They're already, those mechanisms are already in place within the laws and rules. And I'd also say that we have the flexibility within our rules to address all the issues that were raised today. And the Department of Education, private career schools have the flexibility to add hours, subtract hours, and increase the training, if that be the case, after they have some time to look at this scope of practice issue. That's all I have to say.
All I can say is this being beautiful is really complicated business. Okay, Ms. Leonard.
Kristen Leonard, I'm here representing the Massage Therapists Association, and I'll just be very brief. Our preference would be to stick with the bill as it came over to you from the House. We've been working very closely with the Board of Cosmetology and others. Feel good about the language as it came to you from the House, and at this point in time just feel as like the dash two amendments may not be the direction that we would recommend, so we'd hope you'd stick with the version as it came to you originally. Thank you very much.
Questions?
Now I'm confused. Could you re-identify yourself, please?
Sure. I'm with the American Massage Therapist Association, so we are the Professional Association of Massage Therapists. I'm not with the board. You heard from the board earlier. We're with the actual, the Professional Association.
I'm Madam Chair.
Senator Farioli.
And in your capacity as the director of the licensure for 15 organizations, and I'd like you to repeat those for the record, or at least recite them for the record. And do you also have access to an attorney general that represents your agency, an assistant AG?
Madam Chair, Senator Farioli, yes, we do have an assistant attorney general that represents our agency and all the boards, and I will try very carefully to at least recite the boards. Board of Direct Entry Midwives, Respiratory Care Therapists, Environmental Health Specialists, Denture Technologists, Hearing Aid Specialists, Cosmetologists, Tattoo, Body Piercing, I'm leaving one out. I believe I submitted that as part of my attachment to my testimony, and if I did not, I would get that information to you post-haste. Those are the boards. The professions under which those are regulated increase. For example, cosmetology has four modalities.
Ms. Wilson, I'm just trying to sort of compare this, and as I think about going to get a tattoo, to me that seems sort of much more intrusive than a body wrap. Can you just talk briefly about what kind of training is required for one to become a licensed tattooist?
Tattooist?
Madam Chair. To become a tattoo artist or to provide a tattoo on which is an indelible ink that's left leaves a mark under the skin cannot be removed unless it's removed by laser, and that is not something that occurs very has a very good result. Tattooists or permanent colorists do everything on the face from permanently providing eyebrows. Mm-hmm. They work on burn victims who can't or may have lips burned off. They actually can provide lips permanently on burn victims. And then you have the artists that may put mom an apple pie on somebody's shoulder or something more sophisticated than that. They use needles and their needles and all of their instruments that they use have to be autoclaved or be one use. There are aftercare procedures that they must adhere to under the law. And like cosmetologists, they are inspected on a regular basis by a professional enforcement staff that actually goes in and makes sure their bioindicators are okay, they're using all the sterilized equipment and so forth. Does that answer your question adequately?
Yeah, thank you. I'm just curious.
Ma'am.
Senator Farioli.
It looks like the Department of Education has already notified the schools of cosmetology that they'll need to increase their curriculum and develop a specialized curriculum for
That's
body.
Correct.
Madam Chair, let me just add, many of the people that carry the spatial technology license now that are practicing in the field do body wraps currently. We don't regulate them because it's not under their license. There are lots of folks out there doing body wraps. I mean, this isn't expanding anything. I think it's important to know that.
Okay. Thank you. Senator Shields. You can just Google that. That's where I'm at. Are you okay with that?
Yep.
Okay. All right. Committee's at ease for a minute. Ms. Chamberlain, we moved out work session on House Bill 2105. The chair would move House Bill 2105. The Senate floor with the due pass from recommendation. We're not going to move forward on the Dash 2 amendments this session. I think let's get this proposal in place, see how it goes, and folks can come back next session if we need more regulation, but just want to get the outlines in place at this point in time. So any further discussion? We've decided that being beautiful is really a lot of work. Senator Shields, anything, any questions? Okay. Would you please call the roll, Ms. Nielsen?
Senator Atkinson. Senator Ringo.
Both excused.
Senator Shields.
Aye.
Vice Chair Braley.
Aye.
Chair Brown.
Chair votes aye. And being the only woman on the committee, I will carry it.
Carry.
That work session is closed. Any further business to come before the committee?
No.
We're adjourned.